Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It's 4:44 p.m. and that is Central Time. Today is August 1st. Well, I thought we'd kick off with the backwardation between the front and second month contracts for Brent crude. So we've had a meaningful contraction, and this is a very swift decline from $6 to $2, really in the space of just a weekend. So this is putting some weight on the argument that there is a massive shortage of crude oil. We've seen that OPEC, led by both Saudi Arabia and Abu Dhabi, have been able to increase supply. And then there's also the fact that Russia's supply hasn't quite evaporated. But we can also then just look at the longer term chart. And if we go back for maybe the last 4 or 5 years, we can see that $2 was the upper side of the previous range. Now, we saw an almost exact opposite extensive decline during 2020. But if we see the backwardation coming back below $2, then that would certainly point towards the end of this supply inelasticity argument. Now, of course, if we just limit what we're looking at to the futures curve, well, we can see that there is still a very steep curve. But one thing is worth highlighting. In a contango, the price falls downwards in time, and in a backwardation, it rises. So we'll need to see this spread reverse in order to really create a big decline. But today was a dynamic move. So we saw that Brent crude was down by about $3. So back in the region of $100. Now, we had a contract change as well. So it created a step in the chart, and that's to be expected because of the backwardations. So we saw that at the beginning of August, or excuse me, of July, and then again at the beginning of May as well because of those contangos. So oil trades on monthly contracts. But certainly back in the region of $100 is psychological for the market. Then let's think about natural gas. Now, of course, natural gas isn't nearly as globally fungible, but the price has pulled back from the $10 area, but it was steadier in here today. There's still outsized demand for LNG. The USA is now the biggest exporter of LNG, so the Henry Hub price is going to be more reflective of that than the domestic environment. And that's probably going to be a phenomenon that lasts for the foreseeable future. And natural gas prices have completed their long-term base formation. So this is now a very, very different environment to what we've ever seen before in natural gas, because spikes in the past have been associated with major weather events, particularly hurricanes, and then higher prices overall because of outsized demand and worries about the inability of supply to keep up with demand. Then, of course, we had the shale boom, which flooded the market literally with natural gas. And now we have an export market, which is a perfect example of how low prices encourage demand. And we have a new and evolving global market for natural gas. And it's likely that it's going to be trading as a more fungible commodity over the coming years, and that's likely to be one of the hallmarks of the coming decade. And there's going to be a lot of competition in that market because Australia is ramping up its supply, so is Qatar, and lots of other countries. In fact, really anyone who has natural gas is going to be selling it into the global market, and building of LNG facilities is going to proceed. Now, when we think about Dutch natural gas, well, we're still right in the region of the highs, and it was up another 8 in here today. So this is still a very clear uptrend, and there is no sucker yet. There's no sign that Europe is going to be able to weather the withdrawal of Russian natural gas from the market. When we think about the UK, Well, the UK does have a pipeline connection to Norway and to the continent, so prices have been contained within a range for the last 8 months, but still very much towards the upper side of that range. And we're still at multiples of where prices were prior to 2021. So this is obviously a very important sector. We have the potential that oil prices are going to start coming down, but people don't burn gasoline in their stoves for the winter. So that's obviously going to be problematic. And the reality is that people don't burn oil to heat their homes or to heat water or cook with either. So natural gas is a supply and elasticity environment because of the tense geopolitical condition. But inflationary pressures may start to moderate because we have this potential downward pressure on oil prices. Now, when we think about some of the estimates that are coming through, well, there's the potential that inflation is going to surprise on the downside. So I think this is a rather important chart to pay attention to. Now, then I think there's another chart, and let me see if I can get rid of some of these. And I thought it was particularly interesting in terms of the global inflation picture. And I'm just trying to close some windows here so that I can find it, because I've been having difficulties. Well, I really should have restarted my computer. But the reality is that we are starting to see that the slowdown in money supply growth is contributing to the potential for inflation to follow suit. And this is offset by 18 months. So we're not that far away. We've already seen that money supply growth has gone negative, and the peak was about 18 months ago. So it wouldn't be all that surprising to start to see inflationary pressures starting to come back down. Now, if we were looking for a reason why stock markets have been steadier, then that would be it. That inflationary pressures are moderating, and therefore central banks will not have to be as aggressive in raising interest rates. So that was a good part of the reason why we've had a rebound in July. But then the bigger question is, what about this natural gas point? What about the war in Europe? And what about the threat of a recession in China? And if one were watching the news over the weekend, then there was talk that Nancy Pelosi, Speaker of the House in the USA, was not going to visit Taiwan. Then she is now currently slated to visit Taiwan. But you have China engaging in a great deal of saber rattling. And I've got a great deal of sympathy with Niall Ferguson when he says that it's not exactly smart when China is on the verge of a recession and is dealing with this COVID zero issue, and they are hungering for a reason to engage in some sort of extraterritorial adventurism to try and galvanize support for the Communist Party at home. Then aggravating them on the point of Taiwan is probably not the best course of action. At the same time, it's not like the US government or the senior government politicians can be seen to be pushed around by the Communist Party. So, this kind of situation can get messy in a hurry. And I thought it was interesting, though, that the Taiwanese market has a long history of ignoring all of this kind of worry. And it was in negative territory briefly, or I guess mildly, in here today, but well off its lows. And we've had a good sized rebound over the course of July. Of course, this is following through on the upside for the Philadelphia Semiconductors Index, which is back in the region of the 200-day moving average. So for a good many sectors, we're at the first area of potential resistance. I've been thinking about the second half of my short position in the Nasdaq, and I was really on the verge of closing it out today, but we did close back below 13,000, so I'm now more inclined to potentially open up an additional short. Now, that is despite the fact. So I think that we really have a very strong market here of opinions. I thought this was also an interesting chart, and what it shows is the number of stocks that are making new 20-day highs. And we can see that historically, when that occurs, especially when we get up to about 70%, then that has coincided with meaningful lows in the market. So, or at least it has happened after meaningful lows in the market. So we've had this register a positive view. And I think that's certainly something that is encouraging people into more risk-taking. And I think this is perhaps the most difficult decision. Do we look at these types of oversold signals, such as the number of shares on the NYSE that are trading below their respective 200-day moving averages, coming off of a test of the region of the lows from 2016, 18, and 20? And obviously, that's a significant rebound from a deep oversold condition. So it's not something that we can simply ignore. But I am also reminded of the fact that in 1999, we had a similar decline. We had an enormous rebound and then another decline in 2001. Obviously, this was in relation to the 9/11 attacks, and then another decline in 2000. So that was 2001, then another in 2002. So, certainly, oversold conditions down here around 20% of issues that are only 20% of issues above their respective 200-day moving averages. That's usually a point where we see a rally. And we've definitely started to see that kind of rally. And we have an inverted yield curve. So something to also remind ourselves of is that usually when the yield curve becomes inverted, the market goes up. It's then when central banks start to panic because their initial fight against inflation becomes too effective because of the lagged effect of monetary policy. Then they start to see growth deteriorating sharply, and then they panic and start cutting rates aggressively. And it is usually at that point that the markets take flight. And that's usually when the yield curve spread pops back on the upside and starts rallying. So that's an additional reason to think that perhaps we might see a further rally. But I do think that in the short term, there may be the risk of a reversion and the potential for a retest of the lows before we then see an additional rebound higher. So I'm not quite willing to jump on board quite yet, because this is the first area of potential resistance where we've seen a bounce from the 1,000-day moving average, and now we're testing the region of the 200-day moving average. So it's a natural area where we might anticipate some resistance to become evident. Now, when we think about the dollar, it's been resurgent over the course of the last year, and then it's been coming down for most of the last month, and we're at the first area of potential support. So this is also a key decision point. If the trend up from the lows in 2021 is going to remain consistent, then the 105 area will hold. If we start to see the index coming back below that level, then the trend will no longer be consistent, and it would enhance the potential that we're going to see a full reversion back down towards the 200-day moving average. If it pulls back below 100, that'll be a failed upside break. And of course, that would all coincide with inflationary pressures starting to come back down, fewer interest rate hikes from the Federal Reserve, and therefore less need to, or less incentive to, hold dollars. So then let's just think about what's going on in China. The renminbi was weaker in here today, and the stock market was steady, but really not in a dynamic manner. And the Hong Kong economy looks like it's moving back into a contraction phase. Alibaba is looking increasingly likely that it will have to depart from listing in the USA and only sustain a listing in Hong Kong. That's putting downward pressure on the price. The Chinese government has said that they're going to intervene to ensure that there's a healthy property developer sector, but the Shanghai Property Index is still in the region of the lower side of this range that's been forming for this year, and it's basically been ranging for most of the last 7 years anyway. China Evergrande has failed to put together a plan for stabilization, and there's certainly a lot of difficulties within the economy, and not least because of the COVID zero. Now, there is some evidence that COVID zero is being eased up somewhat, and the scale of lockdowns in cities outside Shanghai has been easier. But that doesn't mean that the worst is yet over. The reality remains that China has a large population of susceptible, and I think most people think of the coronavirus as being problematic for the elderly, but it's also problematic for people with pre-existing conditions, and China has one of the largest populations of people with diabetes in the world. So they're terrified of the coronavirus getting out of control, because it would have a disastrous effect on the population, and not least by just simply inhibiting people's ability to work, even if they were to just adapt to a let it rip way of thinking. So there's obviously geopolitical tensions. I went to Taiwan in 2019 because I wanted to just see the place before China invades. I've never really subscribed to this view that they wouldn't be ready to invade for a decade. I've always thought that they would go sooner, that it's in their interests to go sooner rather than wait. And the reality is that they might be ready to go at any point. And that is it's not even a black swan, because we're already talking about it, but it's not something many people are willing to really consider, that China is quite easily as capable of the same kind of actions as Russia, but it's a much larger economy, and it would be a lot more difficult to impose sanctions on. So gold prices are starting to respond to a weaker dollar. The price was up very mildly again in here today. We're coming back up into the region of the lower side of the overhead trading range, around $1,800. I would anticipate that we get a little bit of pause and consolidation around that area. But if the dollar has peaked, and of course that would mean that the trend becomes inconsistent, well then we can anticipate that the gold price will continue to rebound. Platinum prices were also in positive territory in here today, coming up above the $900 area, and that is the lower side of the overhead trading range. So it's an important area that prices will have to sustain a move through in order to confirm a return to demand dominance. Then there's a lot of enthusiasm about demand for electric vehicles and demand for renewable energy. And the resources sector is exceptionally enthused about the potential for outsized demand for copper. But China consumes more than half the copper in the world. So what happens there is going to be a much bigger determinant of the recovery potential for copper than any other factor. And the price has partially unwound its short-term oversold condition. It's now pausing in the region of the 1,000-day moving average, and it's going to have to sustain a move up and through that level in order to confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.